Garin was waiting for them at the doorway to his chambers. With a grateful, nerve-racked look on his face, he shook Devlin by the hand and thanked him for his help. With what, Devlin wasn't certain. Rena said she was going up to the infirmary wing to make sure nobody else tried anything tonight, saluted Garin, which was a bit comical, given that she was wearing a dress shirt too small for her, panties, a gun belt, and nothing else, and went off down the hallway.
"Please, Douglas, come in. We should discuss. Come inside,"
Garin babbled, tugging Devlin across the threshold by the hand. Devlin allowed himself to be pulled inside and was witness, as the door closed behind him, to a startling transformation. The instant the door was shut, Garin changed. The vacant, frightened look in his eyes vanished. The slightly flabby, ineffectual lines of his face hardened. The faint stoop in his shoulders was erased. In an instant, he was transformed from an affable but rather stupid, dissipated aristocrat to a military officer, cool, composed, and in control of the situation. "Right," he said briskly, his tone similarly shorn of the rather plodding but well-meaning inflection it had held before, his formerly thin voice suddenly deeper and richer. "Listen, Mr. Carter, I'm not an idiot, and you're not either. As far as the rest of the palace, except for the Dragonar sisters, know, we're a couple of ineffectual fools who are so shaken by what's happened that we've come in here to get roaring drunk and try to forget." He went to the sideboard, put ice into a tumbler, and poured it about half full of a bright orange liquid, then handed it to Devlin, who took it dumbly and stared at it. "One drink, on the other hand," Garin went on with a sardonic grin, "will serve to steady us." Then he poured his own and tossed it back. "Go on," he said, gesturing with his drained glass and making the ice clink. "Drink up. That way you'll smell right to the guards when you leave. You can hold one drink, can't you?"
Right, said Devlin. He drank with some trepidation, but it really wasn't that bad. Slightly piquant, rather tart, but the alcohol aftertaste wasn't overpowering. He wouldn't characterize it as delicious, but it didn't make him cough or gag anyway.
"Saurian brandy," Garin explained as he took the glass back and put them both away. "Nothing but the best for my trick liver. Got it on New Chiba," he explained, "and it's the best 50,000 credits I ever spent. It enables me to project the public image of a hopeless drunk without becoming a hopeless drunk."
Devlin nodded, enlightened.
"Ah, so the one medicinal drink..."
"More of a psychological thing," said Garin dryly. "Take a seat," he added, vaulting casually over the back of an armchair to land in it. Devlin walked around it to another one that faced it across a low table and sat carefully down, feeling vaguely surreal.
"Now then," Garin went on, steepling his fingers, "let's you and I, Mr. Carter, think about how we can keep the girl we love alive."
Yeah, listen," said Devlin. "I've, been wondering about that."
"I imagine you have," said Garin, his dry smile widening a trifle. "It's rather complex, but you needn't worry. I know she feels very strongly about you. Her communications with me have made that abundantly clear. And frankly, now that I've seen how you handle yourself in a real crisis, I haven't a problem with that. It doesn't matter to me that you're an Earthman. You're true to your friends, and you've got fiber where it counts." His smile became slightly warmer as he went on. "I wish you continued luck. Amanda is a very worthwhile young woman, but she can be a trying companion." He paused, chuckling to himself, and added slyly, "And I think you're just starting to learn that if you take her into your life, you take Rena Dragonar, too."
Devlin went a little pink.
He said, but Garin raised a hand.
"But I digress," he said. "We're not here to talk about the socio-sexual peculiarities of the Gamelon royal family. There are a few things you need to know before you can understand what's been going on around here."
"I know a little," Devlin replied. "Amanda told me once that she and her younger sister don't like each other very much."
Garin chuckled bitterly. "That's an understatement," he said. "Xenia and Amanda loathe each other. Xenia is greedy, grasping, vengeful, and cruel. She wants the throne, not for any particular purpose, certainly not for the glory of Gamelon, but simply so that Amanda won't have it. I thought she would hesitate to take any truly overt action if I arranged to be back in the palace during Amanda's vacation, but it seems I was wrong. She's become bolder, or more desperate. She must have heard the rumor that Father is thinking of retiring when Amanda graduates from WPI.
Is he?
No. Crew knows how these rumors get started. As far as I know, Deslok the First will sit on the throne for just as long as Grenlo Dragonar can keep him there. But apparently Xenia believes otherwise. She can see her window of opportunity closing.
Hang on, you're the eldest, Devlin said. Why aren't you in line?
Because I'm a hopeless drunk, Garen replied, as if it were the simplest thing in the world. Also a brainless dilettante. A nice guy, but no one you'd want to trust with anything more important than a fairly small warship, and only then if he has a very competent understudy to make all the important decisions for him. He smiled. As far as the Admiralty knows, Coromel really runs the Vengeance. At that moment, as though summoned, Cora Dragonar entered through one of the side doors. This time she was dressed, wearing a Gamelon Navy duty uniform with sidearm and sword. But Devlin, remembering how she had looked before, and how her sister had looked some time after, reddened a little anyway. "In truth," said Coromel with a smile as she sat down next to Garen, "it's more of a committee rule." Becoming more serious, she said, "I've just heard from the infirmary. Dr. Treege says Amanda will be on her feet by week's end, but she's lost her right eye." Devlin's fists clenched, but Garen actually smiled at that. At Devlin's incredulous look, he said, "Eyes can be replaced with relative ease. Not so brains." Devlin supposed he had a point. "And speaking of brains," said Garen conversationally, "how long have you known you're a telepath?" Devlin stared at him for a long, long moment, then got up and replied, "I think I'll have another drink." "Be my guest," said Garen. "Coromel, would you be a dear and thank you?" Devlin sat back down, accepted the drink the elder Dragonar brought him, and tossed it back without looking at it. Then he put the glass down on the side table and said, "I manifested when I was 12. Garen raised an eyebrow. "And you've learned to control it well enough to function on your own in 3 years? "There are ways," Devlin replied. "You'll forgive me if I don't share the details." The Gamelon Prince nodded. "Of course. The fact that you're not a member of your world's Psi Corps indicates a certain level of illegality, but the laws of the Earth Alliance are not my laws, and I feel no obligation to enforce them," he added with a sardonic smile. "Still, you must have found recent political developments alarming. Have you told Amanda what you are?" Devlin glanced down at the floor, then said slowly, No, I haven't. I've been too afraid of how she might react." Garen looked thoughtful, then went on, "I can understand that. I've read about the telepath problem on Earth. It interests me. You see, the Gamelon genome has produced no telepaths. We have no cultural history of them, no social framework in place for dealing with them. If anything, the average Gamelon in the street probably fears telepaths more than the normals among your own people. That's why the man you scanned destroyed himself. The shock of encountering an actual mind-toucher drove him momentarily mad." Devlin looked miserable. "I'm sorry about that. I didn't want him to die. He took a deep breath, let it out slowly. "I always knew I might have to kill someone someday, on the run, but I always hoped it wouldn't come to that. I never expected it to happen here, of all places." He shook his head. "But then I never expected to be here."
"You must have known you would come here sooner or later," said Coromel, "when you chose to pursue Princess Dessler."
Devlin shook his head, a wan grin stealing over his face. "Well, that's just it, you see. I didn't. Amanda chose me, and I've never really understood why. I don't think she does either. Last summer, when I helped her get back here in time for the Valdrani War, she asked me to explain it, as though I ever could." He looked sheepish. "Truth to tell, for the first 6 months or so I knew her, I didn't really know who she was. I'm not very good with off-Earth politics."
Garen grinned. "That's probably what drew her to you initially," he said. "You didn't react the way most off-worlders do when they hear her name. That made you special enough to investigate further. And the rest..." He shrugged. "I'm just a brainless dilettante. The complexities of love are quite beyond me."
Devlin furrowed his brow. "Why are you posing as an upper-class twit?" he inquired. "I do it because it makes people, like Psycor Field investigators, write me off and pay me no mind, but you..."
"Well, that's kind of a long story," said Garen. "But perhaps you've earned the short version. Many years ago, Amanda and I swore a pact. She would be Empress when Father retired, and she would make me Admiral of the Fleet. Amanda was very small then, and I just beginning military school. All I ever wanted was to command the fleet in battle. I never wanted to be Emperor, with all that that entailed. And anyway, I really don't have the head for it. I have no patience for politics or the demands of rule."
Devlin looked skeptical. "And Amanda does?"
"She has hidden reserves of patience and cunning," said Garen mildly. "She's much better suited to the intrigues of the throne than I. But we knew that Father would never pass me over for the succession if we simply asked. It would look too strange to the nobility and the public. So, with Coromel's help, I cultivated the image of a bad seed. Dissipated, drunken, affable, but stupid. By the time I got out of the academy, I had nearly failed out twice and been disciplined for slovenly behavior and absenteeism more times than I can count. They only graduated me because of who I am, and because drunken, foolish Garen is so damn likable. Before long, the Council of Nobles was dropping broad hints to Father that, much as they liked me and thought I was a fine, hearty fellow and all, perhaps it would be best if he skipped me and went on to Amanda. Our plan had an unfortunate side effect, though. Xenia believed my act as well, and began to think that I would make a good emperor, easily malleable by my lovely and talented youngest sister's charm and will, you understand. When I was passed over in favor of Amanda, who has never had the slightest patience for her chicanery, well, she became furious, though she hides it from Father. At any rate, the attempt started then, 2 years ago," said Garen. "To keep the peace in his house, Father decided he'd send one of them away, hoping that the rift would cool with absence. Amanda volunteered. She was interested in other worlds, and wanted to see more of the universe. Experience, she believed, would stand her in good stead when she took the throne. So Xenia remained here, and Amanda went to Earth, where she met you, and you know the rest."
Devlin nodded. "She's stepped up her attempts because of the rumors about your father retiring, year after next, taking advantage of the summit with the Valgar to keep him busy."
He sighed. "She's damn near succeeded."
"The best thing would be for the both of you to leave Gamelon as soon as Amanda's well enough to travel," said Cora. "But Amanda won't stand for it, I expect. This is the first attack that's come close to succeeding. She'll want to strike back."
"Which she mustn't do, no matter how tempting it is," said Garen heavily. "Father will be angry enough as it is. If one or the other actually manages to succeed in Sororicide, he'll explode. Amanda is his favorite, but he still won't accept an open vendetta."
"And we can't prove Xenia was behind the attack tonight," said Devlin glumly, "because I killed the man I learnt it from."
"He killed himself, Devlin," said Cora gently.
However it happened, Devlin said, he's dead, and I can't testify to what I pulled out of his head.
Not in a court of law, but perhaps Deslock, said Cora.
No, said Garen. He's right, Coromel. We can't involve Devlin in this mess any more than he already is. It isn't fair to him. If we use his talents to straighten out a dispute within the royal family, it'll get out. It'll get back to Earth, and he would never be able to go home.
I think he ought to seriously consider not going home anyway, said Cora.
She turned to Devlin and said, You did know the extension to the Psi Act is on the very doorstep of passage? By the time you return to Earth, it will very probably be law.
Devlin nodded.
I know, but I've got away with it this long. I might as well stick it a little while longer. Besides, Earth's my home, what? Be it ever so rotten, and I can't run out on my friends.
Garen gave him a long, searching look, then smiled.
I'll enjoy having you for a brother-in-law, he said.
The three of them talked through the night, finally getting to sleep just before the gray of dawn. Devlin stretched out under his coat on Garen's couch. They had come to no resolution, merely run out of energy, but all three were still thinking about it as they slept, turning the problem over and over in their minds.
Devlin woke at noon, blurry-headed but unable to sleep any more. He got up from the couch, put his coat back on, looked around, and then realized that he was still dressed, aside from his coat, in nothing but undershorts. Feeling rather like a flasher with his coat buttoned over his boxers, he found his way back to Rena Dragonara's quarters. They were empty, but he was able to get showered, brush his teeth, and put on his clothes anyway. Then he went to try and find the palace infirmary. That task occupied half an hour, after which he found that the medical staff didn't want to let him in. He wasn't related to the injured party, he wasn't even a Gamelon, and they'd heard from the palace investigators that he'd been somehow involved in the unfortunate events which had befallen the princess. What could motivate them to permit him entry to her sick room? The surprisingly imperious voice of Kitarina Dragonar, that was what. Her Highness commands that Mr. Carter come to her side at once, she snapped, and that was enough for the orderly who had been barring Devlin's path. With a crisp salute, but, Devlin noticed, no apology, he got out of the way. As soon as they were alone in the corridor, on their way down to the private room that held Amanda, Rena's bluster vanished and she slumped, looking dispirited.
"Morning, Carter," she said glumly. "You don't look as hungover as you should."
"Sorry," said Devlin, trying to look as though he were in more pain. "I take it you're in on the game, then?"
"Mm-hmm," she replied. "Isn't much Amanda knows that I don't. Matter of fact, right now there's at least one thing she doesn't know that I do."
"I see someone found you a uniform," said Devlin, hoping. As he'd hoped, that drew a smile from her gloomy face, albeit a small one.
"Yeah, Dr. Treege said it was too distracting, dressed the way I was. Shame, really. I thought that shirt suited me, didn't you?"
"Oh, absolutely. Right down to the ground," Devlin agreed. She gave him a quizzical look. "Figure of speech," he added.
"Oh," she said, and then sighed sadly again.
"Hell of a bodyguard I am, Carter," she said. Devlin wanted to make some reply to that, try to buck her up, but they'd arrived at the door of Amanda's room. An armored Imperial guardsman stood on either side. They nodded to Rena, and she passed through with Devlin at her heels. Amanda was propped up in an articulated recovery bed, swathed in covers to her waist and smocked above. The right side of her face was bandaged almost completely from hairline to jaw. The left side looked more or less normal, discounting the glorious black eye. There was a Duracell dressing around her upper left arm, and another around her right hand. When she saw Devlin, she smiled, though the effort obviously cost her some pain from her bruised and stiffened face. He hesitated in the doorway, uncertain what to do,
but she raised her unbandaged hand and held it out to him, so he came to her side and took it in both of his.
"You're a fright, my dear," he said with false cheer.
"I'm sure," Amanda replied. Her voice was raspy, dry from oxygen.
"I'm afraid I may not be much to look at from the right. My naval rank entitles me to a replacement, but not a particularly elegant one."
She looked at Devlin with her one good eye and went on,
"Do you understand?"
Devlin gave her a blank look, then caught on and smiled quietly.
"Of course," he said.
He bowed his head.
"Though it may be rather a moot point when you hear what I've to tell you. You may not want me around to see it in the first place when you know the full truth about me."
Amanda looked faintly puzzled, but only faintly. She was conscious, but obviously chemically altered.
"I'm afraid," she said dryly, "I don't follow you, Earthman."
"Amanda, Devlin looked up again, looking her in the face, his own countenance stricken with the fear of what might happen next.
"I've not told you one important thing about myself, a thing you had a right to know last summer, when we said goodbye in Boston, and I almost told you then, but at the last minute I didn't dare. I thought if I told you I'd..."
He hung his head, ashamed, and finished in a small voice,
"I'd lose my chance. And since then I've been too afraid of what you'd think of me."
She regarded him with an expression of interest, but nothing more.
"Well, spit it out, then. Suspense and my present condition don't go together well," she said calmly.
Devlin gazed silently at her for a few moments, then said quietly,
"I'm a blip, Amanda. An unregistered telepath."
Amanda looked back at him for a few moments, her face unreadable. Then she asked simply,
"How long have you known?"
3 years. No, almost 4, Devlin told her.
"Before you met me?"
"Long before."
"And you didn't tell me. Not because you feared I would turn you into your planet's ridiculous psi corps, but because..."
Her face adopted an intensely thoughtful look.
"Forgive me," she said. "The medication slows my thought processes. You didn't tell me because you thought I would be less willing to have you as a lover if I knew?"
Devlin looked absolutely miserable.
"Well, yes," he said.
Amanda blinked once, slowly. The corner of her mouth quirked slightly. It could have been a smile or a grimace. In his agony of self-loathing, Devlin couldn't really tell. Then it quirked a little more. Her eye twinkled a little, and then she leaned her head back against the pillow and laughed, a long, high, slightly cackling laugh. It was not a bitter sound, but a laugh of pure amusement.
"Oh, Devlin," she said as she came down.
She extracted her hand from his to wipe a tear from her eye, then seized his right hand again as he tried to withdraw it, pulled it to her lips, and kissed his knuckles.
"Oh, Devlin," she repeated, "that is the most precious thing. Here I am, crown princess of the Gamelon Empire, willing to commit the enormously politically unsound act of welcoming an Earthman to my bed, and you feared that I would hesitate simply because he's a particular sort of Earthman? Your naivete charms me anew."
Devlin blinked.
Garen said that Gamelons are more afraid of people like me than the normals back home.
"Not that you're afraid of anything," he added hastily, "but..." He shrugged.
"I'm sorry. I should have trusted you."
Amanda composed herself and eyed him coolly.
"Indeed you should," she said sternly. "In future, I trust you will remember this."
In future. She was letting him off the hook. Devlin sagged with relief, pressing his bowed forehead to the back of her hand.
"I will," he promised. "Always I will."
"That's enough, Earthman," she said, gently pulling her hand free and then running her fingers through his shock of yellow hair, before reaching lower and tilting his chin up to look him in the face.
"Don't go to pieces. You've earned this indulgence. I understand it's you I owe my life."
"That's right," said Rena. "I was no damn use at all. My best friend gets jumped by 4 killers right under my nose. 2 attempts in the same day, one of them involving a whole flight of stolen starfighters. I should have realized Zenya would try something else. I should have damn well insisted on staying there, not gone back to my own damn room like an idiot. Cruz, axe, Amanda, I'm a Dragonar. I should have been sleeping right there with you, not 1 floor down." Amanda chuckled, giving her a fond, ironic smile.
"You stupid girl," she said mildly. "You know I can't sleep with you in my bed. You snore too loudly. And your elbows. You're as free with those things in your sleep as you are when you're awake."
"No doubt," she went on, watching Devlin's face go crimson, "you've blackened poor Devlin's ribs for him by now." "Nah," said Rena, her flagging spirits bolstered by Amanda's mock rebuke. "I've been sure to be gentle with him. He's such a fragile creature, you know."
"Oh, indeed," Amanda agreed. "He is quite a pathetic specimen, isn't he, Kit? Cowardly, spineless, weak and stupid, just as he claims."
The air of light mocking vanished from her voice and face as she looked Devlin in the eye again and added, "Clearly such a creature wouldn't hesitate to fling himself headlong into unknown danger, wearing nothing but undershorts and an old coat." Devlin blushed again, but it was a blush of self-consciousness rather than embarrassment this time.
"Yeah, you've got that right," Rena chimed in. "He's as bad as that worthless brother of yours. It's enough to make me swear off men for life."
"You never had any use for them anyway," Amanda pointed out, the vein of sarcasm interrupted.
"I know," Rena replied. "But I'm rethinking my position," she added, giving weight to the pun by pressing herself vampishly against Devlin's right side.
Devlin's blush changed back to embarrassment.
"That's so cute, the way he does that," said Rena.
Amanda agreed.
"You should see him when he's..."
"Amanda," Devlin blurted,
"please."
Amanda gave him a speculative look.
"Well, if you insist, Earthman, I do owe you my life. We'll have to be careful, though. I should hate for you to have to explain to Dr. Treege exactly how you caused the internal bleeding to resume."
Amanda stopped there because she knew that if she pushed him any farther, his ears would catch fire. And anyway, her automated medication system had just hit her with another shot of Devarox, and she suddenly wasn't feeling up to stringing all that many words together in a foreign language. She wanted to get serious again for a moment, tell Devlin how much his actions had meant to her all aside from saving her life, tell him that they joked because they were Skyblade and Sniper, and Skyblade loved him and Sniper was starting to, tell him how special that was, tell him that she was a Dessler and Kit was a Dragonar, and everything would be perfectly all right. But she fell asleep before she could get any of it out.
"Don't understand that girl at all," Devlin muttered as he left the hospital wing a few minutes later.
"She's not as complicated as you seem to think," said a voice, and he jumped, not having realized until that moment that Coromel Dragonar had fallen into step beside him.
"Sorry," she said, then continued, "She and Garen are of a type. For all that they pretend and bluster, they wear their hearts on their sleeves. They're like their mother, Dulshaya grant her peace. Electron loved not wisely but too well."
Devlin grunted, too preoccupied with the problem of Amanda's predicament to show the interest he normally would have felt in the late matriarch of the Dessler line.
"Who's Zenya take after, then?" he asked. "I don't think she's like Deslock, unless I've completely misjudged him."
"Zenya is an aberration," said Cora coldly, and Devlin scratched that topic off his to-be-explored-further list.
"Maybe so," he replied, "but she's an aberration who's come damn close to killing someone I'm very, very attached to. And she almost got Amanda, too," he added with a wry grin. It had its desired effect, cracking the ice that had formed over Coromel's face at the question about Xenia. She smiled and said, "You're of a type too, Carter. You're right, Xenia is dangerous. But Amanda's as safe as she can be on this planet right now. The medical staff are untouchable by Xenia's methods. They cannot be bought or plied with charm. They answer to Deslok himself."
"Speaking of," said Devlin, "does Deslok know what's happened yet?"
Cora nodded. "Dad told him this morning," she said. "He's livid, of course, but with no substantial evidence that Xenia was behind it."
She shrugged.
"Deslok has something of a mental block about his offspring. He chooses to believe Garen's charade, and he chooses to believe that Xenia will grow out of her assassination phase if she's given a chance. At any rate, there's little he can do. The negotiations with the Volgar are critical and delicate. Until Friday, he can do little but keep in touch with me and my sister through our father, and ensure that we're keeping watch over Amanda and Garen. Speaking of whom," she said as they drew near to the entrance to Amanda's brother's chambers, "Garen would like to see you again. He's been thinking some more about the problem and wants to compare notes with you." Taking Devlin's preoccupied silence as assent, Cora conducted him to Garen's apartment, then excused herself and disappeared through the side door.
"Good afternoon, Mr. Carter," said Garen, welcoming Devlin to his rooms again with a firm handshake as soon as the door was closed. "I trust you slept well?"
"Fairly well, thank you. Your Highness? Commander?"
"Garen," said Garen, smiling.
"Well then, I suppose you'd best call me Devlin then," said Devlin. "Or Carter. Take your pick."
"The Dragonar sisters seem to have laid claim to Carter," said Garen with a grin. "At any rate, Devlin, what news?"
"Bloody little," said Devlin, plopping down on the end of the couch.
"Amanda's forgiven me for not telling her about my little legal problem, and the doctors are working on her eye now, but..." He shrugged, frustrated. "We're still where we were last night, as far as Xenia goes."
Garen frowned. "I've been thinking about it for most of the morning, but I don't know what we can do either. We could investigate the attackers, but I'm fairly confident that wouldn't lead anywhere. Xenia is too careful to leave a material trail."
"It was surprisingly sloppy of her to have direct contact with the one you encountered."
"Normally such killers would be hired through an intermediary, or even a chain of intermediaries. She must have been in a terrible hurry. Still, none of them will have had anything traceable, and their personal histories will inevitably lead nowhere. Gamalor is full of their type, ex-soldiers looking for a quick credit or two, plying the only skills they have."
Devlin replied.
"Tell me something," he said after a moment's thought.
"Yes?"
"Why do Cora and Rena get all stone-faced whenever Xenia's mentioned or around? I mean, I realize Rena can't be too fond of the girl. She keeps trying to kill her best friend, but their reactions seem awfully, I dunno, extreme, even for that. I almost get the feeling Rena hates Xenia more than Amanda does."
"I wouldn't be surprised if she does," Garen replied sadly. "You've heard Rena's family motto?"
"For every Dessler a Dragonar?" Devlin inquired.
Garen nodded. "Did you notice that Xenia came alone to Amanda's rooms yesterday? That she was unaccompanied at the dinner last night?"
Devlin thought about it. Yes, now that Garen mentioned it, he had. He hadn't noted it consciously, but some part of him had noted it and filed it away.
"Coromel and Kitarina had a brother named Dalin," said Garen. "He was 2 years younger than Rena, the same age as Xenia. Dalin was devoted to Xenia.
not that unusual for a Dragonar, but he carried it to an unhealthy degree. He would do anything, absolutely anything, for that girl, and she recognized his devotion at an early age and abused it. In primary school, Dallin would fight boys twice his size, whole groups of them, because Xenia said they had insulted her. He was a scrappy little fellow, I have to say that for him, even if he wasn't... Cora would kill me if she heard me say this. The smartest fruit that ever fell from that particular tree.
What?
Devlin's voice caught. He coughed and tried again.
What happened to him?
When they were 7, said Garen, Xenia told Dallin she wanted a Dorjak egg. Do you know what a Dorjak is? Devlin shook his head. It's a kind of bird that lives in the Vron Mountains, northeast of Gamalore. Rugged country, still wild and quite beautiful, but harsh. Dorjaks are great scarlet and green creatures, quite beautiful, and they grow to have wingspans as great as 30 feet. Their eggs are scarlet and green, too, as big as your head, and highly prized as items of beauty in some circles. Cadets at the military academy commonly trek into the Vrons to bring back Dorjak eggs for their sweethearts. Sometimes they don't come back.
And Dallin
was 7 years old, Garen said, nodding, and knew not the meaning of fear. They found what was left of him at the foot of Mount Krace. Grenlo's verdict was that Dallin's own foolishness had led him to his fatal misadventure, but as far as Cora and Rena are concerned, Xenia murdered their brother, the same as if she had put a gun to his head and pulled the trigger. But they are Dragonars, and Xenia is a Dessler. So they cannot satisfy their thirst for revenge. Yes, I could easily believe that Kitarina hates Xenia more than Amanda does.